Welcome to episode 316 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow hosts.
Go, Steve, go.
Yeah, the guy that steps all over everything. I'm Steve Stebbing.
And I'm Bill Harris.
The worst. It's not like I'm in a podcaster for over a decade or anything. It's just like, yeah, step all over everything Marina's saying twice in a row. Now I just realized I did it.
No, just listen. You're allowed. You are in wrestling mode.
Yeah, I am. I am.
There will be no SmackDowns tonight, though, I don't think.
Brother.
Do I need to explain that at all? Or
I don't know.
Is it just going to be a weird, ambiguous thing for the audience? Is I'm in wrestling mode.
I don't know. Do you want to explain a little bit of it? I don't know.
I don't know. As a wrestling fan, we are recording this on WrestleMania weekend. And WrestleMania weekend is a big deal to wrestling fans. Even if you don't follow WWE all year long, if you ever loved the thing, this is the big night of spectacle and everything. And not only that, this is a bigger, like, I'm going to get a little geeky here, but this is WrestleMania 40. So they're calling it WrestleMania XL. It's in Philadelphia. They're calling it their biggest WrestleMania ever. But also at the same time, this is the first WrestleMania without the involvement of Vince McMahon. This is the new era of WWE. I've seen a lot online calling it the Triple H era, which is the guy that's running it now, Paul Levesque. And arguably he's already on a really great path right now, and everything is like he just might make WWE even bigger than they are. Because he has the vision for it. And yeah, it's really exciting. So I'm torn between two worlds at this point, is what I'm saying.
I didn't know Triple H's first name was Paul. So yeah. I learned something new today.
Yeah. A lot of the top people and best people in wrestling are named Paul. It's weird.
Okay. Sure. I don't know. I was an Undertaker fan. I don't know.
Hey, and I mean, he still has his presence. He tours because he's retired now. He tours with a show called The One Dead Man Show. And it's just him telling stories, which you can imagine he has many over his career. An interesting dude, but he's also like a thin blue line dude. And like there's like certain things about, like, because he's a Texas guy, I'm pretty sure. And there's some stereotypes that roll with those men. And he's got a lot of those on him, I think.
Yeah, that was the area, the era that we were watching wrestling. It was
the Attitude era.
Steve Austin,
Kurt Angle, and The Rock, and all these. Yeah,
Triple H.
And that is a lot of where a huge fan base was in that time. And that's why a lot of people left, because WWE went PG, and because they wanted to get more of the younger audience and everything. And they did well in their own ways. But yeah, I think people still hearken back to that time. And I think that they're going to move back into an Attitude Era type thing.
It was like a total soap opera. There were women being like taken and forced marriages. I'm like, what are we watching?
For people that don't watch wrestling, I can't believe you're into wrestling, but you're also like a film guy and everything. And I said, I don't think the two have to be really synonymous with each other at all. I'm not dumber for liking wrestling. I just enjoy. I enjoy the spectacle of it. I enjoy the characters of it and the physicality. Like, there's been some absolutely incredible matches that I would put on par with great cinema moments, in my opinion. But if you're not willing to look for that, you're just going to poo-poo it. You know what I mean? So I find sometimes it's hard to defend being a wrestling fan to a person that doesn't want a defense of it, you know? So,
yeah. So that was our preamble in the entire time of like, did we just really talk about wrestling?
Wrestling. Yes. You're welcome, audience. You're welcome. I should really start a wrestling podcast. That's what I'm thinking now.
Ideas. This is not a bad idea at all. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think it's fair to say this is a pretty decent segue into the movie of the week.
Yeah. That's solid.
Which is Monkey Man, Dev Patel's love letter to action, the movie that broke him, like literally broken foot, I think he said. Like, I don't even, at this point, like, this thing was insane. Like,
it's,
I mean, I love John Wick. Like, Keanu is God, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry, this actually has stakes. It's no longer just about the dog. So that was a good enough opening. Like he actually has things that he needs to get out of his system. And it's legit. But this movie is batshit crazy from, like, the opening scene.
Yeah.
Not right at the opening, but pretty close.
I call it an odyssey of rage and totally. And violence amid a cultural backdrop that's spiked with the societal commentary. And I mean, Dev Patel is 1000% a student of the game. Like, he learned from, you could tell he learned from every single person he worked with. Yeah. There's elements of Danny Boyle in here. There's elements of David Lowery in here. There's so many different, like, beautiful callbacks to incredible cinema. And the reds that are in the third act made me giddy. Like, I was like, yay! Like, the doorway stuff with the red, I was like, oh, I love this. I love this. Yeah, this is a hard fight to 2024 movie. Like, this is one of the tops, in my opinion.
And the really scary part is that Dev Patel has gone on Twitter and said, I ran out of money twice making this film. Did anybody see him cutting any corners in this film? This film looks incredible. I love the look. So Steve was talking about the ending. The whole movie looks incredible.
Yeah.
Sharon Meyer, the DP, who also shot Whiplash for Damien Chazelle, that guy's pretty good. It does not look like a cheap movie. It looks like a really expensive film that I love that there's a certain point in the film where you see him just kind of snap.
Yeah.
And then it is on. Mm-hmm. And the last 30 minutes of this film is bonkers.
Yeah. It's wild. It is wild. And I love the vibrancy of how this film moves.
Yeah.
Like, it's always perpetually, like, going forward. And I love it.
The fight scenes are so fast and crisp and do not look fake.
Yeah.
No, like they actually were hitting each other to the point where I was like, holy shit, this is like John Wick has kind of a ballet kind of thing. This is just rough people getting their ass kicked. Holy shit, what happened to that dude's finger? You know, like, holy shit, this movie's nuts.
The bathroom scene where that guy got shot multiple times.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, this is amazing. Just the choreography of this, the moving of the gun into a shit filled toilet that just had that guy brained on the front of it. Like, there's just so much to this. It's just, it's just always, I feel like you're always like, like, you're just reacting constantly to it. You're like, you're in the fight with them. And yeah. I dug
it. It's not only that, like, at the beginning of the film, he needs to get a gun. And there's a really elaborate scene on how he gets the gun. It's all really well thought out. Mm-hmm. And congratulations to Dev Patel, because, yeah, as you said, he's obviously learned from people, but this is his first film. Like, holy.
It's so accomplished.
Yeah.
It's so accomplished immediately. Like, within 20 minutes, I'm like, this is a first film? I'm blown away. And also, little MVP in there, Charlotte Copley. Bring it in, just like, what a great performance, and just sleazy as shit.
The right kind of douchebag for this film.
Absolutely. So, like, he was perfectly cast. Like, it was almost like Dev wrote that role and was like, I'm gonna have Copley do this one, because who else?
Well, yeah, and I think you guys both nailed it. The fact that this is a debut film, not just, like, visually, it's interesting, but the story itself, I think, has a lot to say. Like you mentioned, Steve, like, there really is a nuance to the storytelling that you don't really expect from an action-filled movie. And I just, like, the first half of it is so intense. And then you have that sort of break where he breaks and, like, finds his, like, the next, like, it's like leveling up. And then you think, where are they going to go? Like, there's still 20 minutes left. Like, where is this movie going? We've already seen so much. And then it just goes like through the roof. Like,
yeah,
I couldn't believe it. And
there's no pedal anymore. The pedal's gone.
It's gone. And I think for me, one of my favorite moments is that scene where he's at the top of the building and he's trying to find a way out. And he looks at the window and he looks at the stairs. And he looks at the way he's like, I'm going to jump through the window. The window doesn't break.
In that.
Hilarious. I'm like, that is a moment I'll never forget. Like, ever. That is ingrained in my mind forever. Like, that moment where he's trying to jump through the window and the window doesn't break.
It's weird, too, because I remember a couple of years ago when people were talking about, you know, who could be the next James Bond. And I was like, hey, I think Dev Patel's a smooth looking dude.
Dev Patel is.
And he's obviously shown that he can do action now. So how about Dev Patel as the next James Bond?
I'd be okay
with that. I would be too. And especially I'd be like, oh man, it's like because every time I look at Dev Patel right now, I think of Skins. And like my first look at him as an actor, and I mean the distance is insane.
I never saw Skins. The first thing I saw him in was Slumdog.
Okay, yeah, I saw him in the first because Skins was always cut up between different casts, and he was part of the first cast, the debut cast on that series. I think Nicholas Holt was part of that cast as well. Like it's a who's who. Jack O'Connell, and that's where I really started to love Jack O'Connell. K.S. Scodelario came from there, and like that whole cast, I think, because I think the blonde from there moved on to Game of Thrones. The whole cast is now like bigger and in bigger stuff now. But yeah, I'm still so blown away that this is what he lands with as a director. It's just like, holy shit, man.
It certainly isn't expected.
This was also supposed to go to not play on the big screen. This was supposed to go direct to like Amazon or something.
Oh, I'm so glad it didn't, because I'll bring it up. The one that they did also famously put to Amazon, I really wish I'd seen on the big screen. So it's an argument for theaters for sure.
Yeah, we went on a Friday afternoon, like literally middle of the day. It was 1:20 in the afternoon, and the theater was way fuller than I had anticipated.
That's awesome.
So I always try to see the movies without people because I don't like people apparently. But no, I was shocked by how many people there were in that theater.
It's also a great movie with culture that can have a broad appeal just by genre standards. Mm-hmm. And I love how Indian that the movie is. Like it pushes that a lot. I love the queer representation and commentary as well in it. I thought that was really, really fantastic. And I mean, you know, them joining forces at the end and everything was like, fuck yeah. There's just so much that's just like, fuck yeah. It's like sequence, there's a cheer moment where you want to cheer. And so many times in that third act, you just want to be like, yeah.
That sequence in particular, like there are so many great memorable sequences in that movie. And like Bill says, the cinematography is like off the chart. That particular sequence is so beautiful. Like that feels like really like a dance, like with the langas, the color of the dresses and the skirts and just how the camera moves around the action. It's just, I was in awe. Like, but there are moments in that movie where you feel like you're right here, like you're right in front of the actors, like you're in the middle of the action. I'm like, how did they even get a camera in there? Like, did they shoot that on an iPhone? Because I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
So he actually did.
Yeah.
So they ran out of money.
Yeah.
So he had to shoot part of that movie on an iPhone, which is nuts.
Mm-hmm. So nuts. It's so nuts. And at the end of it, I love painting that room with the elite's blood, essentially. Like, it's so poetic. It's so, like, especially them showing the blood splattering the paintings and dripping down. And it's just, like, yes, like eat the rich, let's do it. You know, it's really nice.
There's also a, like, not to spoil something, but there's a Tony Jaa like kick in the film that my entire audience just like started clapping at. Holy, that was good stuff.
I like the smashing the bottle of the hot sauce on the guy's head on the frickin' burner. And then just explodes
into flames. Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's just I want to watch it again right now. I'm just talking about it.
Like, I really, really hope that there is a disc release with some behind the scenes. Because I would love to see the minutia of making some of these scenes, because it is intense. Like, it's well deserving of it.
Yeah, I'd love a commentary track.
Give me a
yeah.
dev commentary.
Right?
Even if it's just Jordan Peele bouncing stuff off dev, just to get him through some PTSD, right? So have producer and director commentary.
I'm curious to see if there is some sort of follow-up. I mean, it'd be hard to top this, but I mean, that ending is certainly open to further exploration of this character and these and some of the themes that they open the bottle on, for sure.
Monkey men?
Or hopefully this whole experience didn't Alex Garland dev and make them want to quit directing films.
Is this what he said about Civil War already?
Yeah, Alex Garland sounds like he's out.
You know, he said he was misquoted. He said he wants to take a break.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which makes is fair.
Sad, though. Makes Which me is- sad. But it's funny how many people are trying to call him a hack.
Have you not seen any of the movies? Like,
I know. It's blowing my mind. It's like, it's again, people living in a fucking vacuum. And just seeing this and be like, oh, he's a fucking hack. And then they fucking turn around and they're like, restore the Snyderverse. And like, bullshit.
And I know, like, and the first time I ever heard of Alex Garland, I read one of his books.
I think the first I heard of him was The Beach.
The Beach. Yeah. He wrote The Beach.
Yeah
I didn't read it. That was the first thing film,
The first time I really started paying attention was 28 Days Later. Because I loved The Beach, but 28 Days Later, like, fucking stopped me in my tracks, right? The Beach I watched on video. I never saw it in theaters, but 28 Days Later, I saw opening weekend, and it changed me. And some of that writing was exactly what did it, and him and Danny Boyle were just such an interesting pairing. As far like reverence alone, like him adapting Annihilation, the fans of that book were like, how do you make this? How do you do this?
I read that book. There is no way. I still don't fully understand how he managed to get a cohesive story out of that book.
Yeah. And he did, and made one of the best sci-fi films of the last fucking 20 years. I'll say Annihilation is one of those movies you don't fuck with. And
Ex Machina.
Man. It's just, the ending of Man is enough to traumatize anybody for like five lifetimes.
Which might be the most divisive of all his films or it might be the fence for all of his films would be Men. You either like it or you don't like it, right? I love it. I think it's a fucking masterpiece. But because the subject matter of Civil War is so pointed, your right wing talking points are going to bleed over and everyone's going to be like, this Alex Garland guy sucks. And you're like, from what? Show me one fucking example.
Yeah, he's on a bit of a streak. Leave him alone. Plus, I'm seeing Civil War tomorrow.
I already got my ticket for Thursday. So. I get chills when I think about this film. I really, really, really do.
I'm gonna try to go on Friday. This is the goal. It's a busy week. Okay, but we got sidetracked. We went from Depth to Depth.
Never. Never.
I think it's fair to say we loved Monkey Man.
Yes.
I highly recommend Monkey Man.
Part of me, part of me really hopes that that movie can stay around for a while and make 50 plus million. That'd be great.
I want to make some change for sure.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I just reviewed it on Letterboxd, at the Steeple Dead on Letterboxd, and I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. It is damn near perfect.
I haven't reviewed it yet, but I hearted it. I hearted it.
So fucking good.
It's so good.
I noticed I hadn't updated Letterboxd since like January.
I noticed that too. I stopped looking because
I'm like, is he ever going to update?
Every now and then I was like, is his account still active? Oh, okay. No, his account's still active.
Yeah, I just forgot.
He's just not.
And plus, I gotta stay stealthy, man. Come on.
Obviously, I don't have any issues with that. I'm just like, here's everything, and here's a couple bullet points of what I was thinking. So you basically know what I'm coming at on the next episode of After the Credits.
I got four aces, man. I gotta keep close to the chest. Yeah. But no, it's... I always check your guys' out for weirdness.
Yeah, and I will bring it up. I know. We get Bill's the one that calls us out on our shit.
Unless I watched a lot of shit, I gotta tell you, I've been watching some crap.
I looked at your Letterboxd video. You've watched like 100 movies already this year. What the
123?
Look at that. You're on fire. I've watched like 22.
Oh, but like I am preparing myself because June, it's gonna like tank. So I need to get to my before. I know where things start to go sideways. So trying to stay on it.
It's like new Netflix chick flick.
Pretty much. You've
probably seen it.
Yes. You can guarantee you. Yes, I watched Irish Wish. Redeeming or whatever it is.
I have a Disney Plus Hulu one. Before a Street Date. So it's not out till actually the 12th.
But which one is it?
The Greatest Hits is on my review list here. Lucy Boynton, Justin H. Min, and David Corenswet are in it.
Okay. Well, we're going to start.
It's a time travel one. So.
Oh, you got me there. You got me there. So I think it's fair to say Monkey Man, see it.
Yes. In theaters, see it. In
theaters, preferably.
If you don't, you're dumb.
We're not mincing words here.
We don't have time for that. And plus, I'm on an aggression role. I'm a Monkey Man in WrestleMania. I'm here to fight, all right?
So. Steve Stebbing's words do not necessarily represent the words of After the Credits podcast.
Isn't that person dumb for not seeing it in theaters, though,
I agree,
six months in the future?
I agree.
Especially, they're going to feel dumb when they watch it. When you're watching it streaming later, when you're listening to this 8 months in the future and it's not playing in theaters and you missed your fucking chance because you were dumb, you're going to watch this movie, you're going to get to the credits, and you're like, man, I wish I saw that in theaters. I was dumb.
Yeah, I agree.
I can't say because I'm generally the one that's like, I'm not paying money to see that. I'll wait till it's streaming. There's like the new Kong, Godzilla, whatever it is. I'm like, I'm not paying to see that. Sorry. I'll watch it eventually when it's streaming somewhere.
Well, speaking of streaming off on a tangent bullshit, I was like flipping through Twitter yesterday and it's like some dude just posted Dune 2, the entire film, on Twitter.
That's what?
And it has over a million views and it's been up for like 4 hours. It already had a million views.
I'm trying to figure out how you can even upload a video that long.
I don't know, but it's all there, and I retweeted it, and then it got deleted.
Oh, it was you. You're the one.
Yes.
Dune Part 2, watched on Twitter, just as Denny Villeneuve intended.
Yes, exactly. I want to see that one.
Yeah. Holy fuck.
I watched it on my phone, not even in landscape mode.
Oh, God. It was in stories mode.
Oh, God.
I watched it.
I think it's my favorite one was like Tenet as Christopher Nolan intended on a Microsoft Zoom.
Yeah. God damn.
Does anybody actually remember what those are? I had one.
I have one still.
I love my Zoom.
Yeah, I loved it too. Yeah.
It was my go-to joke for when we first started podcasting. I was like, you can get this anywhere. You can get it even a Zune. Pull it out from under your door. It doesn't need to be a door stopper anymore.
Hey, now. Hey, now. Loved tech that did not survive.
No. No. Not a lot of Microsoft stuff, like hardware, really does.
No, it doesn't.
Yet he's still a billionaire, so I don't know.
Well, because he saw the future. He's like, it's going to be subscription model. No one is going to own any software. You're going to license everything. And everybody laughed at him.
Then why still try to make tech?
Look where we're at now. Yeah, we're licensing Office. We're licensing video games. We don't actually own anything. Unless you're crazy like us, which probably have, like, you know, shelves full of DVDs and books. But, you know,
awesome, Carrie Coon.
World, we'll have stuff to watch and nobody else will. So, you know.
Yeah, God bless Carrie Coon, eh?
And Tracy Letts.
Tracy Letts.
They're helping us keep, they got, what, 10,000 Blu-rays or something like that? God bless you guys.
Gives a shout out to DVD Beaver on, like, Jimmy Kimmel.
That's seriously?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about some other movies. Who wants to go first? Who's got stuff?
I'll rock.
I'm go for it, Steve.
I'm not scared. Like I said, I'm feeling violent.
I don't have a lot. So you guys are probably going to talk about all the ones that I have.
I figure there'll be a few. I got a couple of classics in here I'd never seen before. But I immediately want to start out with Roadhouse, the 2024 version. Maybe the bar was set low. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't really have the bar set low because I like Doug Liman as a filmmaker. And probably to no one's surprise, now that you know that I'm a wrestling fan, I fucking love this movie. This movie was so much fun from top to bottom. It's charming. It's got great characters, a really fun script. Conor McGregor lands as like one of the better villains I've seen in a long time. And there's an odd relating between Dalton and his character that I thought was really funny as well. The line directly is, "You got something broken in you. I have something broken in me too." And there's like a relatability that they find within insanely great fight scenes. And I know we just talked about a movie that has really great fight scenes. But Roadhouse attacks it in such an entertaining and albeit almost Fast and Furious way that really works. And you can see what the fuck's going on in all moments of the fights, and I really dug that. The action's insane. They're really playing up Florida big time, and I think it works to its advantage. And yeah, I dug the hell out of this movie. I don't know.
I'm with you. I thought it was a lot of fun. Way more fun than I had anticipated. I'm like, I'll watch another one if they make another one.
Yeah. If they're gonna do more, and they do set up that they can do more.
Yeah,
I don't know how their survival of this character happens, but they do. And yeah,
they'll find a way. If there's a will and there's money to be made, there is a way.
I like I like how he's hired to be like the bouncer for this place, but
and he almost never bounces.
He just sits back and trains the other dudes how to have charisma.
I love it.
It was fucking hilarious.
I thought that was pretty funny too.
This movie wouldn't have been a lot without Jake Gyllenhaal. His infinite charisma is on point here. He's always really
stacked. Like it's been a while since I've seen him without the shirt on. Like, Jesus, what's happened?
He's a pretty handsome dude. I agree with that.
Yes.
Conor McGregor's fun. The love interest stuff I didn't care about at all. Sorry, it's pretty bad. Other than Joaquin de Alameda shows up as her father, which made me laugh. That guy rules. Mm-hmm. But no, it's fun. We're allowed to have fun. After you watch all these like subtitle films and all this stuff, yeah, we're allowed to like Monkey Man and we're allowed to like Roadhouse. This probably should have been on the big screen. You probably lost some more money they said he was given a choice, like, we'll give you extra money if you put it on Amazon, or you'll get less money if you put it in the theater. And he took the extra money. So it was his own damn fault. But at the same time, if you watch the film and it looks like it's releasable, fucking release it.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Because that's an audience movie. It hit huge streaming numbers for them as well. Immediately. It did really, really well. And it is it's a wild ride movie, and it's one that you kind of want to see on the big screen because it is a big movie in every way, especially the from the boat to the restaurant. Like, that whole sequence is like balls to the wall. Like, let's go. And yeah, I like a little bit of the character work in it. Billy Magnussen, when he has something to work with, he turns it up every time. He's so great. I really, really like him. And I'm spacing on the guy's name, but he was in Broad City. He's usually in comedy. He gets his arm broken and then he's nice to Dalton throughout the whole movie. Like, oh, hey, man. Like, he's just like, that guy is adorable. I love him. And even that first scene at the bar, the you just got slapped. Like, that scene is so great. The comedy is always working. Rarely anything doesn't work in it. And Conor McGregor's entrance into the film is like, that's
how that you whole bring shtick, a character in. Yeah, that whole shtick really works. Like, you think, oh, this is gonna fly, but he sells it.
His totally swagger funny. Is so great. Yeah. And the fact that it's the real Conor McGregor swagger is even better. So he might not have had to act a whole lot for that movie, but it works.
It works. Yeah.
The best part is I heard that he smoked Jake with a punch, like real hard, like didn't know how to pull a punch properly. And like the first punch he threw, he like smacked him in the nose.
Oh.
And he was just like, oh no, sorry, man. Sorry. You know, just doing his Irish thing. And yeah, just bloodied him up. So I think that's pretty good.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And I guess however Jake took it is how that because they're like, it seems like the friendship is real between them. So
yeah.
Let's move on. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It was just okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't dislike it at all. I thought it was okay. I thought people got super dumb in it. Like, everybody just got super dumb, especially McKenna Grace just became a fucking idiot. And then there's also like a full on like queer thread, and they just cut it right immediately. It doesn't even make sense to put it in. And I don't know, as far as it's surviving on nostalgia, but it also feels like an episode of the real Ghostbusters cartoon from the early 90s.
Too many cooks in the kitchen for this film.
I think so.
How many characters are in this film? Everybody. And how many of them get nothing? Like, Finn Wolfhard literally tries to catch a ghost for the three scenes he's in.
Yep.
And like, Bill Murray looks like he's being tased to like walk forward to walk into frame because he was not going to be there.
No, why they bother with him anymore, to be totally honest. He's just always phoning it in. So,
like, Aykroyd's fine and Hudson's fine. And Annie Potts shows up for like two scenes. And it's just it's just too much. But at the same time, it's not a bad movie, other than it gets really silly at the end.
Yeah.
Like the final boss thing was like something from Diablo. Like, it's just really weird.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I didn't understand the hate on it either. I thought it was, like you guys say, it's fine. Like, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not. I'm probably not going to remember much of it, but you know, it was entertaining for the 2 hours or whatever it is that I saw it. Mm-hmm. I've already forgotten most of it. I thought that the final, like the bad guy, was kind of stupid. Really underwhelming, and that fight sequence was really underwhelming, but like, generally overall, I thought it's okay.
Yeah,
probably better way to spend however much that movie cost to make. But
yeah, and for the second time bringing her up on this episode, Carrie Coon all day
Carrie Coon, every all day. Day
absolutely day. she can have the worst script in the world, just her delivering it is fine.
I'm fine with it.
And it feels like Paul Rudd's has trouble finding a gear in this movie.
Yeah. But can I say something? Paul Rudd is like 55 years old.
Yeah, I know. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, I don't either.
I don't. He like, looks my age. I don't understand.
Like, what is he like on? Like,
I don't know.
Is he on testosterone replacement therapy? I don't know. Holy crap.
He's in a cryo chamber in between anything. I don't know. It's insane. They put him in a cryo. They only let him out for Kansas City Chiefs games or something. I don't know. It's just weird. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a middling film. I don't think I'd ever seen it before, but I saw Peter Weir's Witness because I got the Blu-ray for it.
So good. That movie goddamn is fucking great classic. Movie.
Yeah. It's so good. It's indicative of those gritty cop drama times, but at the same time, Peter Weir can steer you in this direction that is unlike anything you've ever seen before. I couldn't ever say before watching that there was a barn raising scene that is like 100% cinematic gold. And then I saw this film and I was like, this is like perfection. Like, just John Seale shot this film and it's just, oh, like so much great sun-kissed photography and stuff. Like it's so nice. Kelly McGillis is really underrated in this one. I think she's really great. And yeah, this is Harrison Ford's only Academy Award nomination. And he's so goddamn charming, especially that scene where he turns on the music and stuff and they have that barn dancing scene. It's just so charming. What a hell of a film. I might as well crack through the other two first time watches. I'd never seen The Contender from 2000 before, which nobody told me has probably the most charming presidential portrayal I've ever seen on film. With Jeff Bridges in this movie is so goddamn good. But hard to think that this is Joan Allen's first ever leading role, and she's incredible. Gary Oldman's phenomenal. It's so sad how relevant this movie is, like right like today, and it's just like nothing has changed in almost 25 years. It's so sad. And the representation of the GOP and everything in this too is like, yeah, okay, yeah, I get it. Really great film. And then, because all these were sent to me with the new Blu-ray releases on them, Triplets of Belleville. I'd never seen that film before.
Beautiful.
Never seen that before. Funny. What a movie, so good. That movie's wild. And like when it gets dark, it's pitch black. Like, oh, yeah. Wow. I was really blown away by it. It feels so well-rounded for being so short. And I love the character design. My wife looked at it and she's like, that's a very French movie you're watching. And I'm like, yeah, it really is a very French film. And I mean, I love Bruno the dog so much. I really loved that. This one, as far as where we're releasing this episode, won't be out until the Friday. The Greatest Hits with Lucy Boynton and Justin H. Min and David Corenswet, the new Superman. And basically, Lucy Boynton is she's grieving the loss of her boyfriend who died in a car accident, but she's able to bring herself back in time through music. Through the music that they were listening to at the time and bringing her back to the time that they were listening to that music. And gets really cloudy in those time parable shit. Whereas it's like, this doesn't fucking work. The script is really annoying in parts and gives Lucy a lot of these lines that are just like, that's so dumb. You haven't earned this at all. And it just feels so horribly goofy. It's a large way for audiences who hadn't seen Pearl to see the upcoming Superman, but hell, they don't use him very well, so might not even come to anything. I watched the William Shatner documentary, You Can Call Me Bill. It was okay. He gets a little spiritual in it. And I thought that was kind of neat. Also, Denny Crane. Gotta love that.
He's like Boston 90 Legal. Or something?
Yeah. Oh, and they do cover him going to space with Dr. Evil. Jeff Bezos. And the emotional connection that he had with that after, and I thought that was kind of funny, interesting as well. Just Captain Kirk got to go and float in space for a little bit, so that's kind of neat. You brought up Godzilla X Kong, which it's big, dumb. It's monsters that don't fade from your screen for a long time. Like I feel like there's a lot of the monsters in it and not a lot of human element, which actually kind of works for the film, except Dan Stevens. Every time he's on screen is worth watching every second he's
Dan
on screen.
Stevens is always worth
I'm so excited for Abigail because there's stuff Same that he here. Says in the trailer that I'm like, oh, he's going to be good in this one too. I'm so excited. Yes. But his character is his debut into the movie is him extracting a tooth from Kong, and it's just so woohoo, like it's so great. There's just like such a yeehaw quality to it that I really love. I would watch more of these movies than I would Fast and Furious movies at this point, because I enjoy myself with these movies more than those movies. So I don't know. I'm okay with the MonsterVerse, and you can keep making them. They're not amazing, but I'm still enjoying them.
It gets really silly in the middle. They're like in fucking middle Earth, man. Like that. Like there's like some like spiritual like liquid stuff on the ground making glyphs, and oh my, it gets really strange. But yeah, it's definitely watchable. Rebecca Hall's having fun. Dan Seed's having fun.
Yeah.
Brian Tyree Henry is a little annoying, but he's kind of funny too. It's kind of weird. Yeah, it's not bad. It's just like Ghostbusters. It's fine. Like it's just,
yeah,
it didn't piss me off.
No, it's there weird. Are definitely other movies that pissed me off for sure.
Yeah.
This wasn't one of them.
No.
I will tell you that one of them was The Truth versus Alex Jones, but I think I was pissed off not by the quality of the movie, but by the fact that it's about fucking Alex Jones. And if you already hate him and think you can't hate him anymore, trust me, you can. You can. It's possible. It's possible. This movie pushed my buttons, especially as a parent. This movie pushed my buttons even more. And I mean, fuck Alex Jones. At the heart of it all, but also fuck anyone that believes his bullshit and helped perpetuate this Sandy Hook hoax conspiracy shit, because the damage is still there, and the damage is just only getting worse, and none of these parents have been able to grieve their children out of the process, and that's horrifying. I can never imagine losing a child in any sort of way, and then secondarily losing your child to such insane violence, and then having people tell you that never happened.
The worst part of it is when they're reading out the verdicts and he's like streaming live laughing at it.
Yeah,
it's awful.
It's horrendous.
Just horrendous. A crap human being. Plus he's like, oh, buy my stuff because I you know, I'm never going to pay this, but still buy my stuff. You know,
yeah.
It's just like, oh, just die.
You don't have to save me that I'm being sued. You have to save InfoWars.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just so much, so disgusting, but it's also like a very focused and interesting documentary to watch. I watched a film called Saint Omer, which I didn't know was a part of the Criterion Collection. I streamed it. But yeah, this is actually like a numbered part of the Criterion Collection. And it's about a woman that is on trial for drowning her baby on a French a beach. And it's told very dryly. It's told basically just through court testimonials and very static shots of this, but through the eye of a journalist in the audience who feels very connected to the whole story, which is actually based on the director's own experience. I think the dryness took a lot of the impact out for me, though. I wasn't as hugely into it as a lot of the critical audience was, because it's like a high 80s, I think, Rotten Tomatoes certified, but definitely a good movie and an interesting story to it, but it just didn't hit me in the way I think it was supposed to. Wicked Little Letters, Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley are such a great pairing on screen, especially playing such kind of opposite roles. The film itself, based on a true story, it was okay. Their performances are really what elevate it. And Timothy Spall is in it as Olivia Colman's dad. And he's just so dastardly. And he is honestly at his best when he plays this kind of a character. So elevated on performances alone, I think Wicked Little Letters is a solid film. I also kind of like Thea Sharrock as a filmmaker. So I thought that was pretty good. Have you guys seen Lynch Oz yet?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw it a couple years ago.
It's finally getting it got its Blu-ray release. It's releasing through Criterion, but not through the collection. And essentially, yeah, it's a bunch of video essays by Karen Kusama, Benson Moorhead, John Waters has one that was really great. David Lowry. I'm trying to remember which the one that kicks it off that was really, really great. But it's just basically connecting Lynch's work to one of his theatrical loves, which is The Wizard of Oz. I mean, and nothing's more obvious than Wild at Heart when it comes to his love for Wizard of Oz. But I thought it was really fascinating because I love a great film doc and I love a really good focused film video essay as well. So this movie largely worked for me, but I'm a film nerd. I'd also never seen until now I got my 4K Criterion. I'd never seen McCabe, Mrs. Miller before. Warren Beatty and Julie Christie.
Robert Altman.
This might be probably my favorite Altman film I've ever seen now. Wow. This film is so incredibly put together. Warren Beatty is amazing. Julie Christie is just electric every time she's on the screen. It's just the tragedy that is David Carradine's role in this movie. Not David Carradine, the brother. Why am I spacing on which Carradine it is? Not Robert Carradine.
Keith Carradine?
Keith Carradine. There we go. Keith Carradine. And a very young Keith Carradine. Oh, the other weird one is Odo from Deep Space Nine is in this, and he's super young, and his role is pretty damn pivotal in this movie, too. And it's just shot like a million bucks. I love the production design on this film as well. And the 4K scale up is really nice looking, too. It looks really crisp. Another one, this is a rewatch. I hadn't seen it. I just quickly wanted to bring this up because I hadn't seen it since I saw it in theaters. I watched Contagion on 4K because I got the 4K for it. Holy fuck, that movie hits so different after 2020. Holy
crap. It still plays like a million bucks.
It's still amazing. I think the performance that stood out to me this time is Jude Law.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I just watched that Alex Jones documentary in a week before it. And especially the arrest scene near the end of the movie, I'm like, there's so much of this movie that plays absolutely differently now.
Yeah.
And it's just like in a whole, like, I remember leaving that movie, I'm like, oh, that was chilling. You know what I mean? Like, but now having lived through, we're all changed. You know what I mean? So I think our interpretation of that movie changes a little bit too.
Right. It definitely. There's a reason why that movie was like number one on Netflix for almost a month once the pandemic started.
And so I couldn't,
like, and people were watching it for the first time. I'm like, how have you never seen this?
I know. I was blown away by that too, because I saw it in theaters. Mm-hmm. And I knew that when I saw it trending, I was like, just no way I can do that now.
Excuse me.
And it took me years. I even still, when I was watching it, I was like, it still feels too early to jump into it, honestly. But it's just an incredible film. Last but definitely not least, the other night I got to see Late Night with the Devil on the big screen. This is the first time I've ever seen the shutter title card on the big screen before. That dun dun. I've never seen it on the big screen before, and I geeked.
So let me ask you, what was there? 10 production companies on that film? It started to get a little funny, but by the fifth one, then you're like,
yeah, the audience started laughing that because I didn't have a huge audience with me, but it started, yeah, there was definitely laughter. And I'm like, at the same time, I'm like, yeah, it is tough to get an independent film out there.
Yeah.
Like, this is showing you how tough it is to get a movie out there, not only out there just like, you know, on a streaming service or whatever, but out there and also on a big screen and a movie that costs this much.
Yeah
that movie rules.
It's so good. It is by very definition slow burn, but I think I would look at it differently watching it a second time now. There's definitely things to it that I would pick up on differently, or maybe see the cues a little earlier. There are things about this movie in the plot that they keep close to the chest and don't give away a lot of, but some of that stuff and the implications of it are so fucking brilliant. This movie is so well done, and everyone does such a great job in their perspective roles and what they're bringing to the story. And we started this episode talking about a wild third act with Monkey Man, and here is a wild third act. It is insane, and I don't even think you can predict where it goes at all.
It's nice to see Desmalchian get like an actual role that's not like him in the background, and he's actually a leading man in this film, and he does a really good job of it. The person I really liked was Ingrid Torelli as Lily, the most chilling like teenage girl I've seen in a movie in a very long time. She's got crazy eyes, man.
Right towards the camera. As soon as she's on screen, she's looking at the camera all the time and is looking at the audience every time. And it's like, this movie is insidious, because and what it's suggesting is trying to infect the audience.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that so much. This is everything. I knew I would when I saw the trailer, I knew I was going to get a treat, but this is everything I wanted and more. And if I would implore people, if you've never heard of this movie, don't even look at anything about it. Just go, just watch it.
I like how the look is just so perfect.
Yeah.
Like the 70s, like kind of fade to it. Like it's on beta or something. Like the tracking errors. It's really fun. I also really liked Ian Bliss as Carmichael
Hank. Oh my
the
God.
The skeptic. He was great. Brought a lot to the movie. Yeah. It's on Shudder in a couple of weeks. So, and supposedly VOD. So people will get a chance to see it. But go and see it on the big screen once again. This needs to be seen on the big screen.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I've already told people you have to see this on the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun ride.
Now I have to find time to see this next week. Yes. You're killing me.
Well, because it's going to be gone soon. If nobody supports this movie, and it is one of those niche movies, it's going to be gone soon.
Well, I might be doing a double bill on Friday. We'll see how
there we go.
There we go. Oh, man. Bill, what do you got?
I only got one more movie, and then I got some TV. All right. I said I didn't really watch much, but Immaculate's a really weird movie.
I loved Immaculate. Melissa and I went to see this.
Like, okay, so I thought the first little bit was, you know, okay. Then it's really fucking wacky.
Yes, it is.
See, it's funny because that and the first Omen were like my expendable movies, where it's just like that. There were other movies that I wanted to see before them, so they kind of took a second seat.
I've had more than one person tell me First Omen's pretty good.
Yeah, same here. And then now you're saying that Immaculate's good, and I've had other people say that it's not like saying it's good, but that it's worth watching. And I'm like, fuck on both of these.
Yeah, I really liked Immaculate. It does go batshit crazy in the basically the second half is just insane. As soon as we kind of figure out that she's pregnant and shit starts to go sideways, you're like, what exactly is going on here? The whole concept, concept here is kind of just nuts. Like, let's be honest, the whole conceit of the movie is pretty crazy, but the final like 10 minutes and then that final scene is fucking nuts. And it's funny because there's a 30 second trailer that came out the week the movie opened. And it's literally just Sydney Sweeney screaming for 30 seconds. And that is essentially the final act of the movie. Like the final scene before she goes and does the thing with the rock is like just her screaming nonstop. And I think I'm with Melissa on this because we talked about it afterwards. I kind of wish we'd gotten a look at the Antichrist before she killed it. I'm like, maybe I don't want to see it, but I kind of wish I had, you know? I want to see what this deranged baby would look like. I don't know. important questions that were discussed after the screening of the movie.
So that movie is Rosemary's Baby.
It totally is. Yeah, it totally is. Like Rosemary's Baby in like literally in church.
Yeah,
like literally in a nunnery.
Well, Sydney fought for that movie, so
good for her. Like, yeah. I mean, I like her and Michael Mohan working together. Like, they make interesting movies. I really liked The Voyeurs when I saw it a couple of weeks ago. I really liked this. It just hit for me. I really enjoyed it. I like Sydney Sweeney a lot. I'm like, make it the year of Sydney Sweeney. I'm here for it. I will watch them all.
I don't mean this in any kind of gross way like the internet does, but she's really great to look at.
Well, I mean,
she's got screen presence. She got really great screen presence. So
I
literally don't mean that in a gross like way.
I don't know if you guys saw her on SNL, but when she hosted SNL, she had a bit in her opening monologue where when she told her parents that she wanted to become an actress, they're like, well, what are you going to do if it doesn't pan out? And she's like, I've got boobs. And I'm like, okay, own it. I mean, everybody else, like, we can see it as she's owning it. I don't know. I think she's great. And I really liked Immaculate. I thought it was a fun, crazy ride.
Hey, she did reality. So I'm on her train for at least another, she has a couple strikes that she can work off. Cause I mean, Madame Web is shit. So she's got another two.
Two. I didn't put it on my list. I did see Madame Web and I don't get the hate. It's not a great. No, I don't. It's not a great movie, but it's also not the worst thing I've seen, even this year, maybe even last month. So, I mean, at least
you've been bought by Pepsi. That's what this is.
Maybe
Pepsi
maybe
came to you.
They're like, you've been bought by Tahir Rahim's ADR dialogue.
He's the worst. He is so bad. Everything he does in that movie is bad. Everything. There's not a single glimmer of like, we should hire him for something else. And they're like, no, this is his anti-B-reel. This is like, don't give this man work because he's terrible because he gives lines like this. Dakota Johnson, meanwhile, her mother was killed in the Amazon while in researching.
Well, listen, nobody said it was good or even like great or even good. I just said it wasn't terrible.
Flash line with you? Where's the Flash line with you and Madame Web?
Maria, I like Madame Web better than I like the Flash.
Oh, wow.
Not by much, but they're probably that's where it falls for me. For me, I think the way that I look at it is maybe different than the way you guys look at it. Because for me, the thing that really struck home from Madame Web was that it's this story about female empowerment. And there's like an actual feeling of sisterhood among these women. There's four of them or whatever. The banter is great. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Yeah, okay, it's a stupid fucking superhero movie that makes no sense.
Yeah,
actually look beyond that to everything else that I liked about
Those three are in their own movie, though.
They are in their own movie. And that's what I mean. It's like, it's not cohesive and it makes no sense and it is not a good movie. But that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it, because I kind of did. I really, really liked the banter. I really, really liked some of the commentary. I really liked some of the callbacks and some of the like the pop culture stuff. I thought it was kind of fun. So, I mean, not to say that I'm planning to see it anytime again soon, because it was not that good. I also didn't hate it.
The only one not feeling the female empowerment in that movie is Dakota Johnson.
Hey, Dakota.
The group camaraderie.
Hey, Dakota, can you smile once?
No.
Just once?
That's not her job. No. Her job is not to smile for you.
I'm against smiling. I'm like obtusely against smiling. Oh, but then that exit scene has to be one of the worst, most Kids in the Hall brain candy things I've ever seen in my entire life.
It is not it's good. So
it's so funny that she's so pumped about losing her eyes. As long as she can cuddle them in the hospital room afterwards. Fuck my eyes. I don't give a shit about them anymore. I'm like already over them.
I didn't say it was good. But I also didn't hate it.
That's my review for the movie. Fuck my eyes.
Oh, man. How do we get from Immaculate to Madame Web? I'm still not sure.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry,
as I said, I didn't really watch much, but because there wasn't really much opening. True. So, yeah. So I saw some TV. I finished Invincible Season 2, which is an animated show on Amazon Prime. Not quite Prime.
Finished, but I got two episodes.
Pretty rad. Yeah, I know Marina's not a fan, so... I know she tapped out on season one, but I think it's pretty awesome. If anything, this season got more violent. How is that possible?
You wait, especially after episode one of season one, you're like, yeah. Okay, okay.
You wait to the final episode. There's like some like hardcore violence in that one. It's just a really fun, well-written show that I kind of just enjoy. Mm-hmm. It's nothing major. It's just a fun show. I watched Physical 100 Season 2 on Netflix. This is a South Korean show where a bunch of different classes of athlete go against each other. It could be a rower. It could be a Taekwondo person. It could be an MMA person. It could be an FBI agent. And they all go and do events. And they're all super nice to each other. They all bow to each other. And then they kick their ass. It's pretty fun.
Netflix really wants me to watch this show. It keeps recommending it to me. And I watched the little preview thing, and I'm like, why do you think I want to watch this? Like, I have zero interest.
I think it's because my daughter on my account watched like Ultimate Beastmaster or something, and that's why it's bringing it up to me.
Nobody's the only other reality. I don't know.
Well, the only other reality show that the wife and I watch on Netflix, and probably in general, is The Circle, and that they have nothing to do with each other. So
I thought you were gonna say like Love is Blind or some bullshit. I don't know.
No. We've watched a couple episodes of Love is Blind, maybe four or five episodes, because it was such a train wreck. and you were, especially when like some of the reveals happen and they're like, oh, she doesn't even want to touch me. And I was like, oh, this is so fucking interesting. Like, some of that stuff is just human interest interesting. And then the other one, we tapped out after two episodes, with the Too Hot to Handle, where that basically singles, like guys and girls, and they're all in segregated or whatever. They're all trying to make connections and stuff, but they can't touch each other. Like, they can't make out or do anything sexual together. And they also can't do anything sexual to themselves. It's just basically about horny people losing their mind. And we're like, yeah, okay. And we're done.
Don't they get demerits if they like kiss?
Yes. They lose money. They have like $1,000 taken off per act or something like that.
Yeah. We started watching this at some girls' night we did. And I was like, okay, guys, I literally feel my brain cells like melting away. I cannot watch another episode.
Look, I'm sorry. If I can't watch a show like Below Decks and stuff like that without feeling dumber, like, how am I going to watch anything else like that?
And the last thing it's not done yet, but Shogun's still really rad.
Shogun is really rad.
Shogun rocks. We're
not kidding.
Has anyone started or gone through the three body problem yet? Because I watched finished. The first three.
We finished
episodes.
It in like 2 days.
No, I haven't.
We powered through.
I feel, I don't know, because I'm still in the first few episodes. I feel like it's still so fucking scattered, and I'm like, I'm still trying to find the point.
It comes together.
Does it? Okay. Because I'm like, oh, you guys are following up Game of Thrones, which had its reviews. I don't know if this is it. So I'm really trying to get myself on board. But do they stick it?
They do. Okay, like, so this is the issue that I had with the book, because I started reading the book and I'm like, okay, I don't see where this is going.
Yeah.
And I'm very confused. I don't know how you're going to bring this together. And I lost interest about halfway through. I'm like, I'm beyond trying to finish things that I don't like. I don't have time for this. So I put the book back on the shelf and I never finished it. So watching the series, I'm like, okay, the first three or four episodes, I'm like, okay, I can kind of see where we're going, because this is what the part of the book that I read covered. And then it starts to like bring things together. And I'm like, okay. So now maybe I should go back and finish the book, because the season ended and I'm like, fuck, I don't think I could wait a year or however long it's going to take them to do season two, I might need to read the books. It does come together, and it does come together in a really interesting way. It's still a bit, I mean, it is like high level sci-fi. There is a lot of fucking science, like real science. There was one episode we watched twice because I'm like, I need to understand what's happening. Otherwise, I think this is going to be problematic down the road. So it is a show that you really like actively need to interact with. But I think it really pays off. And for me, I think it really works.
Okay, good. I was hoping that one of you guys had watched it.
Yeah, no, it does. I think it definitely does come together. And I think if nothing else, it certainly like elevates the work, the source material.
I think it's going to be very tough for your flighty watcher. The guy that needs something of at least within the first two episodes need something, because even after episode one, like when the episode ends, you're not, there's nothing to it that's like cliffhangery or like whoa, there's nothing to it like in that those regards in a lot of the show's run. The I will say that it looks very expensive for some of the stuff that is doing. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like they have a lot of fucking money to work with, but at the same time to do very mundane things with. But yeah, I'm still on board. I'm still going to watch it through, cause I do have a completionist, addiction to myself that I'm like, I can't just be like, oh, well, that's how that, and like, I don't need to know how that ends. I kind of do at this point. And I really like John Bradley.
Yeah. And I mean, it does end on a cliffhanger. Like they're clearly ready for season two. And they leave it they leave you wanting to the point where I was like, okay, well maybe I'll finish book one and I'll pick up book two now that I kind of know where things are going. So I am definitely curious to see more of it. We'll see if I actually do or not. I think for me, it might be the translation that's not working for me. There is a lot of cultural notes in the book that I think take you out of the reading experience, because you kind of feel like, well, these must be important if they're being included in the translation. But at the same time, like they totally take you out of the story when you're stopping constantly to read some sort of note, historical note. So I don't know, maybe it might be varying, which I think is why the adaptation works so well, because you don't need that context. That context is there, like it's on screen. Yeah. So I don't know. But I thought Three Body Problem was really, really good. Both Dan and I really enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it more than Dan did. But yeah, like there were it's not like flighties. Like you can't just kind of watch it sitting back. You actively need to be like engaged with it, because it does not fluff the science. Like the science is there. You kind of got to know what the hell's going on.
Was it like that Benson and Moorhead film where all that math was going on the screen?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, like, it's kind of, it's a little bit like that. Yeah. But that I still have not, like, and that's the thing with the Benson and Moorhead movies. I feel like they're always grounded in a reality that is far more intellectual and smarter than I am. And I can't always get there. This doesn't feel quite that advanced. Like things are broken down enough that like you can still process them, but you actively need to be engaged with the story. Like you can't just like, you know, be on your phone and like looking up, and because you're going to miss stuff and then shit's going to happen. You're going to be like, why is this going on? It's like they explained it 10 minutes ago if you were paying attention, because that's what Dan does. He'll like look on his phone and then he's like, I don't get it. I'm like, well, you should be watching the show. Just say.
Did anybody watch Ripley?
I watched episode one. I enjoyed it.
I'm halfway through. Yeah.
Steve Zalian.
Yeah. It's Steve Zalian
doing it.
Stunning. Yeah. Like that. Oh, the first, like, for me, black and white is kind of like hit and miss. Like sometimes it's gimmicky and you're kind of like, oh, you're shooting it in black and white because it's a gimmick. And then other times you see something in black and white and you're like, okay, well, they're actually making use of the color saturation to say something interesting. And for me, like that opening, like
the stairway with the stairway.
Yeah. And the subway, just the way that it's beautiful. It's like breathtakingly beautiful. It's such a gorgeous looking show. And I mean, Hot Priest any day of the week.
Especially like I'm like 3 weeks off of watching, All of Us Strangers. So I'm like re-immersed back in the, I love Andrew Scott. Like just he's amazing. Give me more Andrew Scott. And
well, and the guy.
Great.
Sorry.
And then Johnny Flynn's in this too. And he's starting to win me over, especially after One Life. Dakota Fanning, which I thought was a kind of a weird choice. He's okay. The Paltrow role.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't think I've far enough to have seen her yet.
She's near the end of the first episode because she's dating Tom Flynn.
No,
Johnny Flynn. Isn't that?
No, it's oh my gosh, I forgot her name. Have you seen it, Bill?
No.
Okay, I'll have to look it up. It's not Dakota Johnson.
It's not her. Oh
no,
Dakota Fanning.
Dakota Fanning. Thank you. Yeah, it's Dakota Fanning.
That's what. Sorry, did I say Dakota Johnson? I totally missed. Oh yeah, it's Dakota Fanning.
She's great.
And I'm hearing a lot of good stuff about her and Andrew Scott going head to head in this series. So I'm excited about that. There was a series that just came. Oh, this actually ties back to my beginning tirade thing. A docuseries, season 5 of Dark Side of the Ring is back, and I love this show so much. It is like a crime series that's just like in the wrestling industry. And the first two episodes of season 6 have already been really good. The first one's kind of a BC relevant one because it's about John Tenta, who is Earthquake in WWF in the 90s. And he was born and raised in Surrey, BC.
Okay. Is that streaming somewhere?
Yeah, it's on Crave.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Vice is the one that produces it, but then it airs in Canada on Crave. And I dig the hell out of that series. It's so good.
You've only seen 2?
I've only seen the first 2 of season 6. Yeah.
Okay. I think I've seen 5.
Okay. I've only seen the John Tenta one. And then I just finished the Buff Bagwell episode the other day.
The Terry Bam Bam Gordy episode is heartbreaking.
Ugh, a lot of these episodes. That's the thing too, is a lot of these episodes they just shatter you. It's just like so sad. And just like the industry chews these guys up and spits them out all the time. And I think it's something that the industry is trying to get away from doing anymore. But there's so many tragic stories within pro wrestling. And through Jason Eisner, who's one of the creators and producers, the guy that did Hobo with a Shotgun, we get these stories told and remembered and stuff. And Chris Jericho narrates it, and he's one of the goats to me. So
Chris Jericho.
So that's it for me for all my stuff. Marina, on to you.
I've seen a bunch of stuff, but I only wanted to touch on a couple. Scrambled, which is Leah McKendrick's film. I think she directs, produces, writes, and stars in. It's a story about this woman who's not quite ready to have children, but she finds out that she maybe won't be able to because she's not producing enough eggs. So it's this whole very lady story about this woman who is trying to come to terms with the fact that she might not be able to be a mother, and the clock is running out when she's not even ready to make that decision, which is something that a lot of people can relate to. And it's a bit of a comedy as well, because she's trying to convince her dad to give her money to freeze her eggs. It's really charming, and I didn't realize that she had written and directed it until afterwards when I went looking for some more information about the movie. And it's really good. I really enjoyed it. It's a really important story. It's really lightly handled with a lot of empathy, and it's just very sweet. And I really dug it. Thought it was pretty good. Stop Motion, which is Robert Morgan's new film. I think this might be his feature debut. He is well known in the stop motion animation industry for making these really experimental and downright disturbing stop motion films. He's got a YouTube channel which has pretty much all of his works on it. And you can tell a Robert Morgan movie from like a still, like they're very distinct. This is on Shudder. It stars Aislinn Francoisi as this woman who is making a stop motion film under the guidance of her mother, who is this famous filmmaker. And she's basically being haunted by the movie making experience. So it's both a movie about making movies, and it's also a movie about getting over childhood trauma. And it is downright creepy in the only way, like the only way that Robert Morgan can be creepy. Like it's something else, this movie.
Is that lead for, is she from The Nightingale?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
She is. Okay. Yeah. So I highly recommend it. It's a bit disturbing, really worth checking out though, if you're into, you know, a little bit of chills. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good.
I put that on my list. I like, that sounds really cool.
It is pretty good. Ordinary Angels. Okay. So guys, I am a sucker for a based on a true story movie. Don't know why. I love these things, generally speaking, not to say that they're always good. This one really hit home for me. I don't know why, because it technically shouldn't work, because it is so saccharine. Like, when you think that you're at the end, like it starts and you're like, okay, so Hilary Swank is going to save the day, clearly. But how many rabbits is she able to pull out of a hat? And then it gets to the end and you're like, there is no way she's going to be able to get a fucking helicopter to pick up this dad and his dying daughter, to get them to the airport, to fly to some hospital in the middle of the biggest snowstorm the Midwest has ever seen. And then she does it and you're like, really? And then you go and look and this is based on a true story and this all fucking happened. And you're like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. But it works. God damn it. I was crying at the end.
You know what stopped me dead in my tracks for this movie is the faith-based studio behind it.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah.
It's something that always stops me dead because I've been burned so many times. So now my question is, in this film, how forceful is the message?
I don't think it's that bad.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Because it's there. It's there. Yeah. But it's not that bad.
But think of all the faith-based movies. They're always message over plot, message over script, message over anything. And that's something I was worried about because I do generally like Hilary Swank. She's not one of my favorites, but I do generally like her. And I'm here for the rising star of Alan Ritchson. Like, yes. I want it to happen for sure. So I do want this movie to work, but it is that faith-based quality because it just rubs me the wrong way every time that stops me from watching this movie.
Yeah. It's not overt. I mean, it's there, but it's not like in your face.
Okay. And as long as it's not like waving a pamphlet in my face. Cause that shit is totally so annoying. Yeah, so annoying.
It's not. And actually you mentioned Alan Ritchson and for me, he was the standout cause I haven't watched Reacher. So I haven't really seen him in anything. And I was like, there's no way this guy is going to be able to emote in any way, shape or form. And God damn it, the guy can act.
Well, so, we're about to have a lot more fun with him next month, I think in May, with the Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yeah.
Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Oh, I'm there.
So excited.
There.
And you should probably watch Reacher. It's pretty good.
Yeah
Reacher is damn good. That's what everybody says. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was surprised. I enjoyed it way more than I probably should have. Thought it was pretty good. John Michael McDonagh made a movie a couple of years ago called The Forgiven, which I still cannot believe that I didn't see this. I didn't even know this existed. And then it landed on Netflix and I'm like, I'm sorry. There is a movie with Ralph Fiennes and Jessica Chastain that I have not seen. What is happening? So you better believe that I watched this thing and holy shit, this movie is fantastic.
I saw that during the online TIFF year.
It was so good.
Yeah.
I love this movie. It's like white and it stars like Matt Smith is in it. Mm-hmm. Kayla Landry Jones is in it. Christopher Abbott, the goat is in it. I'm a big fan. I love this movie. I think it works so well. It's a movie about like privilege and representation.
Rich men's penance.
Very much so. And Ralph is so good. Like he's always good, but I thought he was particularly good here. And his character is the only one that really has any sort of like major story arc. And I think it totally works. I love this movie so much. I think it's so good. Everybody should see it. Fantastic.
It changes such a gear too after the incident.
Yes.
It's very much so. Yeah. Yeah. And it feels very different for the John McDonough movie.
It totally does. Because, I mean, I've seen his other movies and they're not this. I mean, I remember Cavalry being pretty dark too, though.
Yeah, but it's got with a humor to it. And I don't think Forgotten has any humor to it whatsoever. It is just cut and dry. Very and much so. Almost vicious.
Yeah.
Like it's like a wounded snake.
It's very like, yeah, very much. Yeah. I totally didn't think Ralph was going to make it through that movie. Like I thought for thought for sure they were going to kill him. Like that, this was my thought. I'm like, okay, this is all leading to revenge is going to be basically him dead. Yeah.
And this was the Morbius year too, wasn't it?
It might have been. Yeah, it might have been.
It was the year he was releasing those and filming House of the Dragon. That must have been a weird fucking year for him.
Mind you, at this point, I'm not really shocked considering he was in that. What was the movie with it? I'm not going to remember. Forget it. We won't even go down that tangent.
Charlie Manson one and Charlie Says?
No. Don't worry about it.
He's had a weird career. Really weird career.
He has. And then last but not least, okay, full admission, I watched this movie in two parts because I'd watched half of it and I had to stop for some reason. Oh, I know. I remember what it was. We stopped to watch the F1 race. And I'm like, okay, I got to finish this before we record. And this is
the F1 Marina's wrestling.
Right.
Yeah, I don't feel so bad about my beginning tirade.
Don't feel so bad.
Turn left.
Okay, Bill, that's enough. Listen, I still haven't looked to see how I'm doing on my, I did join a league. Like, I've never joined a league for anything.
They have fantasy leagues leagues for F1?
You better fucking believe they do. And I was number three.
I could believe betting, but I didn't know that there was fantasy leagues.
Fantasy league, I was number three in my pool after the first race. I was beside myself because there was like almost 2,500 people in that pool. But it did not last. But we'll see where I am. I haven't looked yet. But, so I got sidetracked. Sorry. So I watched Redeeming Love, which is DJ Caruso's new movie. This is the same.
Really?
The one. Yes.
The name from the past.
Very
like,
much
like
so.
Disturbia guy.
Let's Eagle just eye. Say this does not feel like the same filmmaker. And this does have, I'm pretty sure this is probably produced by a Christian group. And it does feel like it. Like it is.
Oh, no. No.
Everywhere. But it is also a Christian film that has whoring, child abuse, like incest, and murder. So you figure out how those things go together. I'm not really sure.
It is
a bit of a mess. Like it is the movie about a young woman who is a prostitute in like the early years of California. And for reasons, she ends up married to this guy who's a farmer. She doesn't believe she's worthy, so she runs away a bunch of times.
What the fuck?
Dude, it's a mess.
So did making I Am Number Four like break him or Maybe. Something? Like, was Maybe. That the last big thing Maybe. That you DJ Caruso did? Was I, which is a movie I've never seen, to be honest.
It's fine. It's not that bad. Like I think Alex Pettifer is probably more deserving of the hate on that movie than DJ Caruso.
Because he's terrible.
Because he's fucking terrible in it, and he was such a diva, and his career suffered because of it for a long time.
Like, they're rebooting it apparently. So
I mean, I'm not surprised. It's a pretty interesting concept. Like the YA novels that they're based on are actually pretty decent. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did try to reboot it. This is not great. That said, I mean, I will say it does look, it must have been pretty expensive to make because it looks pretty good. The cinematography is actually really beautiful. It's, you know, you're in California, it's beautiful mountains, lots of open fields, beautiful sunsets. It is a really nice looking movie. And Abigail Cohen, who plays the lead, is actually really good. Like, if the movie was like, I wish the movie was better, because I actually think she is pretty decent. And I hadn't seen her in anything, and I went looking, and I'm like, she looks familiar. And I'm pretty sure I saw one or two episodes of the Wick Saga, which is like was her big break, which might be where I had originally seen her. She's pretty good in this. The movie is just not, it's not terrible. It's just also not great. I can't really recommend it, but she's pretty good in it. I don't regret seeing it, but it's whatever. It is what it is. But yeah, DJ Khaled's career has gone not great.
His last theatrical released movie was Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage.
Wow. This is not like this has, and I'm still not sure how he ended up here, because this seems so far from anything else he's made. And it's just mind blowing, honestly. Yes. Like, it just makes no sense.
Oh, and it's the Universal Christian film banner that it's under.
There you go.
I was like, oh, is this an Angel Studios movie? They're using some of that Sound of Freedom money.
Nah, no. But, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, it's not a, like at the beginning, it's not really overt. And then, but you know, the husband is always like, oh, but you know, I will wait for you because I love you. And she's like, just let me go already. I'm a whore. Like,
that's like a weird turn.
It might be worth watching just for like how kind of crazy it is, but
it's got Loco Marshall Green though.
It's not horrible. It's just weird. It's just
Shouldn't Logan Marshall Green be making Upgrade 2?
That would be a better use of his time, to be honest.
Let's do this.
I'm with you.
E1L. Let's get going. Well, actually, Lee Winnell's doing Wolfman right now. I saw that still from the set. So I don't know.
And that was, I will end on redeeming lust.
So, so who wants to pick a film for next time?
Well, I don't know what's coming. Other than Civil War, I don't know what else is coming.
I think Civil War is a pretty worthy choice at this point.
I agree.
As the week we're heading into it, I think it's more than a worthy choice. I also say Sasquatch Sunset's coming out soon.
Yes, it is. It's coming up in a second.
Yeah. Abigail. Yes. I mean, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. There are a few that that I think we could play with for sure. It's definitely Loosey Goosey coming up. Boy Kills World.
So we got Civil War, new Alex Garland, which is I think the one I'd probably want to do, just because Steve will get it.
Yeah, I've already got tickets, so that's a guarantee. Yeah,
A remake of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
No, it's a it's a BET channel remake though, isn't it? Though I thought it was like a TV movie.
I was like, what the hell is that?
I don't even understand why. Didn't anyone when they remade Adventures in Babysitting and it was like a Disney Channel original and nobody cared?
Yep. Abigail looks awesome.
Yes, and it's Radio Silence.
Yeah, can't wait for that. Yeah. That might be a second choice. Mm-hmm. Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yep.
And Sasquatch Sunset. I don't know if Steve will get that. So
I will get a screener. It's being released by Route 504, so I have a connection. So,
okay, no, I was actually wrong. We probably shouldn't do Civil War. Rebel Moon.
Part 2. Scargiver.
The Scargiver.
Oh, God. Okay, so can I say something? This is just like a little tangent. The other day, like yesterday, 300 was on TV, which I haven't seen in I don't know how many years. So we were watching before the F1 race, and I'm like, you know, this is the most Zack Snyder movie Zack Snyder has ever made. And we didn't know that this was going to be the most Zack Snyder movie Zack Snyder has ever made until now. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, now that you mm-hmm. look at his oeuvre of movies, like 300 was like the roadmap for what we were going to get. And I don't know why we're complaining about Zack Snyder movies, because he told us exactly the movies he was going to make in his second fucking movie.
Yep.
Weirdly, I think Sucker Punch is his most Zack Snyder movie of Zack Snyder movies.
I
could
go with that.
That movie is so overbearing at every point.
Have you seen The Headman lately? It's something else.
Is it? Okay, I haven't seen it in a very while, a long time.
Yeah.
Probably since it opened. Yeah.
Let's just say it. I mean, it both holds up well and it doesn't. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, it's a movie that is exactly what it was at a time of release, except I am not the same person I was when I watched it when it came out. So, I mean, I still have like a special edition release of that movie that comes with like a Spartan head. It's something else. And I remember loving that movie. And I watch it now and I'm like, maybe not. Maybe
ever it's since,
not quite as good as I thought
it ever was. Since the Lesbos episode of South Park, it's just lost its luster. They exposed it. I think they even say, like, if that movie wasn't in slow motion, it'd be 45 minutes long.
Yeah, I could go with that. I mean, nothing real, like, I don't know.
Nothing that Zack Snyder does in slow-mo needs to be done in slow-mo.
That's like, true.
He had in that first Rebel Moon, he had grain dropping in slow motion. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Artistic choice, okay? Leave the man alone.
You're not Ridley in Gladiator. Shut the fuck up and make a fucking coherent movie.
All right, sorry.
Fuck you, Snyder bots. That's all for you.
I sidetracked this. My apologies.
And like the last major film is, I think it's Luca Guadagnino.
Yeah, Challengers.
Challengers.
I don't know if I'll be getting that one for sure. I hope so. I hope because of Zendaya that it's going to be a wide release. But
For a minute I was like, "What the hell are you guys talking about?" And you said Zendaya. The
tennis movie.
Now I know the one.
Yeah, with Josh O'Connor too, because La Chimera is going to get a release somewhere in this month too, or in May. Is it this month or in May?
Has that not come out already?
Or maybe it already did come out. I wasn't hot on that movie.
I did not
either.
Like it.
Yeah, I wasn't.
So
either.
Yeah, I failed to see the point of it. If we're being completely honest, I failed to see the point of that entire movie. It feels like she's trying to do Varda.
And it's very artsy for artsy's sake. I felt not a whole lot to say, but then I am also not into like magical realism. Is really not my vibe. So I could have just missed the point, and I'm fine to admit that. But I thought he was really good.
And
lock him in a crypt and walk away.
That's, yeah, exactly.
Right.
I feel like we get our best opinions when we see a movie at the Playhouse, because our comfort level isn't optimum. So we better fucking like the movie.
It better be good. Better be good.
And that's not entitlement. That's just fucking reality.
Yeah. I saw Ford versus Ferrari there, and that movie fucking killed. So good.
I saw, and I know Bill did too, because we're in the same screening. I saw American Honey there.
How did that play?
Not well.
Not well. No, and that was also Red Turtle Day.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was like I'd been shot. it was over for me. Also in that 26, I think Boy Kills World is that week.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought the trailer for this was interesting. The King Tide, with Clayne Crawford and a bunch of people, whereas like they have like a little girl that can command the sea, the fish.
Oh,
she loses her gift and shit goes wrong. That looks really interesting to me.
I agree.
Caitlin Cronenberg's debut film also comes out. It's called Humane. It has Jay Baruchel and Emily Hampshire in it.
Emily Hampshire, I'm sold. You got me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited for that one too. Because another Cronenberg in the game? Like, let's do it.
Not gonna lie, crushing a little hard for Emily Hampshire.
She's pretty great.
Yeah.
She was really good. I don't even know if I brought this to the show. Fitting In. I really liked her in that. Good movie. I dug that movie.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, and it's shot by Douglas Kotch, who shot Crimes of the Future.
Cool. Oh, that movie's so not good.
And Through Black Spruce, which I actually also liked as well. Those are both really well shot movies. Yeah, I'm so in. So in. Holy shit, is that the last Don McKellar movie we got?
Oh, no, really?
2018. Wow.
All right.
That's my original love of Canadian film comes through with just bringing up Don McKellar. Bringing it back to Last Night.
Oh, classic.
Good movie.
Or was the one where they're underground?
Yeah, that's Last Night.
Directed that. Yeah. It's good stuff. So anyway, sorry.
So hopefully Civil War. If not, we'll figure something else out.
Yeah, sounds I think good. Civil War is a safe bet because I already got a ticket. So, Sasquatch Sunset, which is the new Zellner movie, which I'm so fucking jacked for. And I'm surprised not more people aren't talking about this. I'm getting a screener for sure. So that could be that's a backup as well.
Okay, that'll work.
All right. So
go weird or go home.
Where can people find you, Bill?
They can find me on Letterboxd and Twitter at SoundJam69. But other than that, I don't. Yeah, that's about it for me. Have a good 3-4 weeks, friends.
I am. You can find me on Instagram at TheMarina2 or on Letterboxd, which is probably more apt, at TheMarina. And last but not least, Mr. Steve.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Letterboxd, at The Steve Will Dead. My website, stevestebbing.ca. If you search my name, Steve Stebbing, on YouTube, you can find my show, What the Hell Should I Watch, with my daughter, Chloe. And that is weekly every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time that comes out. It's also available on shiftheads.ca. I'm on the horror podcast Tremble, and our latest episodes are on some 90s classics. We did I Know What You Did Last Summer and The Faculty.
Love The Faculty.
They both for as bloodless as I Know What You Did Last Summer is, it's still fun just predicated on those performances, because that cast is fun. And The Faculty is still underrated gold. And it doesn't really move or look like a Robert Rodriguez film. And so early in his career to do that, to be like, hey, guess what? I can also be a studio guy for you really, really quickly. Just kind of shows his versatility. I wish he was still making good films, though. Because I think Hypnotic was reviewed a couple times on this show into varying bad degrees.
Not good.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And that one feels like a studio. I'm just going to step in and do a dutiful job and move on. Where was it going? Oh, yeah. I was just about Tremble. And that's a weekly show. And yeah, that's enough. That's enough out of me.
And I don't remember Mel's stuff, but
we'll link it.
She's on Twitter.
It's on the
Letterboxd.
Melzy tweets and
yes,
something like that. Yeah,
that sounds right. We'll make sure to link to it. Come on by etcpod.ca for links to all of the stuff that we talked about today. And as Bill mentioned, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Until then,
hack the planet.
Hack the planet.